Hello, and welcome to the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. We're happy you're here. On the show, we're certain that you'll relate to the caregiver stories and find comfort with your honorary sisters. Before we start, I want to remind you to go to our website, confessionsofareluctantcaregiver.com, and sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to connect with you on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter, and YouTube. We're sharing tons of useful information that you can use as well as chat with our followers. Now, let's jump right into today's confession. Hey, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Oh, my God.
Wait, we have another voice.
A fourth voice.
We have a voice.
Oh, my God. I wonder, Jay, it's enough. We've got a guest.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh my gosh. And Em, I feel bad for Emily J.
Yes.
Do you know why? Because? I feel bad?
Why?
Because we have seen Miss Kitty's documentary that we just saw the first part of it.
Yeah.
But it's so good. And Miss Emmy hasn't got to see it yet.
Yeah.
Well, I feel bad.
No, I was caretaking at the time. Remember that?
Oh, that's right. Team player. Oh,
she had to bring that up, Kitty. Did you hear that? Wow. She was like, I was working. You guys were out lollygagging, having popcorn, watching a movie. So working. There you go.
250 miles away. You know what, Jay? Tell us about Miss Kitty.
I am going to tell you. So, and we have Kitty Norton with us today. She is amazing. She is already a sister. She's kind of like a rock star to us. She's like famous. Yeah,
she's popular.
Yeah.
She is. Yeah, she is famous. So in 2016, Kitty left her job in Los Angeles to move to her hometown in Portland, Oregon. And she says that event was to, I love this, walk, stumble, and crawl to death's door with her mother. That she's like us. She's just like, here it is. Now, her caregiver story goes back to 2010. Her mom was diagnosed with vascular dementia, and her dad, much like ours, vowed to keep her, his sweetheart, at home and take care of her until the day she died. And Kitty's sister, and they believed that until her dad died suddenly and left them with their mom, Gloria. So they promised and they took care of Gloria. Since that time, Kitty,
give it all away, Jay.
What? I'm sorry. Oh. Since that time, when she moved home, Kitty, Natalie's like, shh, Kitty has, she has authored a dementia, Stumped Town Dementia blog. She has done numerous videos, and we'll talk about the movie in just a little bit. Wine, Women, and Dementia, best title ever. All right, Kitty.
Yes.
Let's talk, because you have like this heart of fun, of just honesty, and just talking about the life with dementia, not dying with dementia, which was something you said that I just love. But it began. How do you say it, Natalie?
Okay, so let's talk about your caregiver. Start from the beginning. Skip over the part where you were born all the way up to caregiver. What happened?
Yes.
So tell us about your family. Tell us about it. Give us some juice here.
Yeah. So everybody was kind of noticing things were a little off with mom. And this is very common in dementia. I had someone at a family reunion come up to me and go, I don't think your mom's right in the head anymore. And blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, talk to her, not to me. You know, we all see it, but I can't get her to a doctor. Finally got her to go to the doctor, and she didn't want my father to know. She didn't want anybody to know. So I took her.
Oh. How old was she? I'm like an interrupting cow. So how old was she?
Let's see. She was 70 when she was officially diagnosed. Yeah. So 70.
Okay.
So things had been happening probably a couple of years prior.
So mom and dad are living in the community, right?
Yeah.
Living in the home.
My hometown. Yeah.
Okay.
And we went and got the diagnosis for mom. And then I came home with her and we told my father.
Ooh.
And he was just flabbergasted. You know, it just destroyed him for quite a while. Mm-hmm. They just had all these plans, you know, like everybody else, they have all these plans, and dementia wasn't a part of that.
Said they're a sweetheart. So how long have they been married?
They celebrated their 57th year that last year dad was alive.
Yeah. Mm. So they were sweethearts. Truly.
Yeah.
Sweethearts.
He spent the first 2 years thinking mom was just drunk. That's what he kept telling me every time. I'd come home.
Really, like,
I don't think she has dementia. I think she's just drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, and he was somewhat right, because mom would just forget that she already had a couple of glasses of wine and keep pouring. But that wasn't the whole problem, you know?
Right.
But then we go fast forward 6 years later. I had moved into a new career and had gone down to LA. I was working in post-production and as an assistant editor. And the last show I was hired on was the first season of This Is Us.
Oh, that's a good one.
I was so excited. But dad died that summer, and he died really quickly. It was like he got a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, and within 3 weeks he was gone. So there was no question that Lexi and I were going to take over. And my parents had been really good about getting their documents together. So I was already POA and the health proxy. And
okay. Mm-hmm. So are you, you said Lexi, so that's a sister. You have one sister?
Yes, I have one sister.
Okay. Are you, I get to ask this. Are you the oldest or the youngest?
I'm the oldest. I'm the cutest. Yes. I'm the smartest. Lexi's the tallest.
So sweet. Everybody's got to have their attributes.
I know. We always do the birth order check. So
yes. I'm kind of just kind of painting the color here. I'm going to ask a couple of questions. Like, where are you from? And then where did you and your sister live? Because I'm assuming during those 6 years, you ladies are kind of are you long distance caregiving, which is code for just being daughters who are supporting?
Correct. Yeah. So the first couple of years I was in town, and you know, mom's progression was pretty slow.
Okay.
And then I had changed careers. So I went down to LA to see if I could get into an editor's chair. That's really what I wanted to do, was edit. And my sister was living on the coast. She runs a destination restaurant on the Oregon coast called The Schooner. So she would, you know, come in and help. I have nephews who would stop by and see grandma and grandpa. It's a really quick flight and not very expensive to get back and forth between LA and Portland. So I came home probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 times a year, just to check in, spend a week. Yeah. That's the nice thing about post-production. You get these big stretches where you don't have any work, you know, the show's down. So I could do that. I could take that time. But yeah, when dad died, I just immediately knew I was moving home, and we split up the week. So she would come for 3 days and I would have 4 days, and mom and dad had a split level. So it was really easy for my boyfriend and I to just come back here and live in the basement, you know, and be here all the time with mom.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Let's go to my home place and we can make out there. But
it's mom and dad's house. Do you want to live in the basement with me?
Yeah. Sure.
That's good times. That's really good times. So you resided in two places during that time. You had your place in LA, and then you stayed with your mom.
We closed up shop in LA.
You just completely closed up. And so you just moved there. And then your sister would come down and do her 3-day stint. And then you were, so it was like on and off. Like you're both joint caregivers.
Yeah.
So how did you have like a family meeting? Cause we have sister calls and where we make these decisions. So your dad passes. And when our dad passed, it was like he was our long-term plan for our mom. So that
exactly
really
our sense. Stories are so similar. That was the same for us. Nobody even questioned. Mm-mm. Like I didn't even ask my dad. He didn't ask me, you know, what happens if I go first? What happens if you go first? Yeah.
He wasn't. Yeah. Dad was not going first. Yeah. What was he thinking?
Yeah.
Well, and we were pretty put out by that beyond the whole death part, but we were pretty mad about that. We were like, whoa, you left us with mom. And so we just felt like God was giving him a break. And so, which is totally fine. So you and your sister, did you have a conversation? I mean, her mom's name is Gloria. That's important to remember. Did you all have a conversation about this is what we're going to do? Because I know in kind of what you had shared with us beforehand, that your dad had said, absolutely not. She's not going into a facility and she's going to stay here. And this is what we're doing. And you said, yeah, I'll do that too.
No, except for there was a point in time when dad was in the hospital that mom got really upset with me. Mm-hmm. And this, she had, in dementia, anything that's very abrupt really spins dementia forward. So yeah. She got really upset with me, looked at me almost like she didn't know me. You know, this was one of the first times that had happened between us. And Lexi and I had a conversation after that because I was just in tears. Once I got away, it was just like, wow. And we had a conversation after that that said between us, we realized we couldn't do this without each other.
Yeah.
And my sister and I had a very big blowout about 5 or 6 years earlier. And we were just starting to talk again. So it was a really emotional time. Our father, you know, at that point in time, we thought he could get to chemo. Mom's dementia is kind of heading forward. Lexi and I are still extremely tipping toeing around each other, you know, just trying not to rock the boat. And then Mom has this little explosion for me towards me. And when we talked about it, Lexi was very reassuring. And we both just came to the conclusion that this has to be done together. And in that particular time, we were talking about Mom and Dad. But I think that was the only specific conversation we ever had. After that, it was just assumed that we would figure this out.
Just a nod. So, gotcha.
Yeah.
So you move in and you bring your boyfriend.
Well, you pick up and you move your life, basically.
Yeah.
So you left your job. You left that.
And so you weren't able to do, what year was this, if you don't mind me asking?
2016.
Okay, so we're all pre-pandemic at this point. No one knows how to use virtual.
Yeah.
Right.
And nobody knows how to use cameras at that point. And so do you quit your jobs? Did you get another job or was caregiving for you full-time?
No, Mom became full-time for me.
Yeah.
Wow. And the nice thing about working in post-production, because before that I had been a nonprofit theaters, you know, helping raise money and stuff.
Yeah.
Turns out when they say nonprofit, they mean it, you know.
Yeah, no, there's no profit.
there's no money.
No, welcome to boredom. Not boredom, boredom.
So for the first time in my life, you know, down in LA, once you hit union, you can make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So I was paying down bills, you know, I was getting some money saved up. I had great union health insurance. All of that lasted for about 9 months. Mm-hmm. So first of all, it was just like, okay, maybe I'll get a job up in Portland. I don't know. Let's just see how this is going to shake out. And by the time the 9 months had gone by, it's like, all right, I just can't get a job. This is too much. This is all of a sudden I'm in charge of Mom and Dad's finances while their daughters couldn't, you know, save two pennies to rub together. My parents, who came from abject poverty, did actually very well. So suddenly I'm a financial advisor of more than $26 in my savings account.
I feel like you lived in LA because like that sounds like the LA story. Like, $26. And I moved to LA because it seemed like the right thing to do.
That was when I was rich in Portland.
Right.
$26. I can afford a pack of smokes and a beer.
Yes.
Emily's just laughing. Emily's like,
that's what you're buying when you're a caregiver some days.
So you guys, you've moved in, you and your sister are sharing, but you, this time with your mom goes for another 2016. Gloria passed, your mom passed in 21. So you're there 5 years.
Wow. So, wait, did you and your mom like each other? Sorry,
this is an important question.
This is important.
So that's funny. My parents would have died for my sister or I in any given moment if they had to. Yeah. But my father had a clear favorite.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
My mother had a clear favorite, and that was Lexi.
Oh, Kitty was not the favorite.
There's a couple of shots in the film that are just like some B-roll where Lexi's, you know, with Mom, and Mom just looks up at her and her face is just beatific. Like, oh, the angel above me. I'm like, oh, brother.
That's
Kitty, I'm telling you right now, I had not, because of the pandemic, I had not seen my mom face to face in person in a year. And she knew we were coming. And I had the second coming, which is JJ. JJ is the oldest. And so I go into the assisted living. She has not seen me. And JJ, she'd seen JJ. And I walk in first and she looks at me and she says, not like, oh my God, Natalie, it's so good to see you. It was, where's JJ? And I was like, suck it. Just suck it. Like,
you're still
I know you like her.
Kitty. Still better.
I'm so
still
pissed better. About that. And so yeah. I was like, there's, I'm like, hold on. I was like, go ahead, JJ. She wants to see you. And then she walks in, same thing, Kitty.
I know.
Out from behind her yes. rainbows and unicorns.
Her face would light up.
And... Okay. Okay, ladies. We're moving anyway. On. We're not talking about the favorites anymore.
Yes, we'll go back. Kitty and I are just going to have the conversation now. So you had, do you think that during those 5 years, because you're, I mean, your mom has dementia, so it's different. Do you think that the relationship improved? Did you think it was neutral? Did it?
Oh, I never had a bad relationship with my mom. It was just, you know, my sister was definitely.
Oh, the favorite.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She loved to hear about Lexi getting in trouble, whereas my father was losing his mind. I'm going to have to bail her out of something again, you know, but mom would secretly giggle because she was such a, you know, my mother's favorite adjective for anybody was, oh, they're so naughty. That person's so naughty. She thought that was always funny because she was not a naughty person. You know, she kind of enjoyed it. No, our relationship was always good. Dementia, you know, changes things for your dementia person and you. Sometimes she would call me by my father's name.
Yeah.
And I think that's because I kind of took over that role in her life. You know, now I was the one who was calling the shots. And so sometimes I'd hear this, Gary, Gary. You're like, hello, mother.
Not Gary.
You called?
So you took like this because I know M did the 24/7 and, you know, she would, that was a difficult time. Natalie, we'd never taken that role on. So you're there, Kitty, but you, good or bad, however those days went, you turned that. Like you guys, you did a blog during this time and you shared some funny stuff. Like I was, you know, going back through and so, but you did videos with your mom. You shared a lot. Why was that like sharing and talking? What did that do for you?
That was so important because I've always been a creative person. You know, I was in crappy bands in Portland, which everybody is. You know, I did cabarets. I was working in the theater, even though I wasn't on stage. You know, I was always around these wonderful stories and creativity and being creative in my own way with the events and stuff. Yeah, that was about a year into, maybe even 2 years into it, where I realized, you know, I had this time when Lexi was here that I didn't have to be on mom. You know, I was still in the house, but I could go downstairs. I could write about what had just happened because there's some funny shit that happens in dementia. You know?
Can't
and
make
nobody
it up.
Was talking about that.
That's exactly right.
I was so tired of the tragedy narrative and every mm-hmm. piece of media I looked to, whether it would be a book or a movie or, you know, just like, oh, okay, now we're going to cry for the next decade because our person has dementia. It's like, I can't do that.
Right.
So I would write the funny stories about like when we found a pair of reading glasses in her pull-ups, like, whoa, how did that happen? First of all, nobody in this household belongs to these glasses. So I don't even know what's going on.
Get it, girl. That's my answer.
Mom was
dating
in
dementia. You know, that would have been the second movie, Dating in Dementia.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure the Villages in Florida's got some. Okay. You have to tell me the glasses and her pull-ups. What's another funny story? Because humor is so therapeutic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mom would steal things. Lexi got home one night and of course we would have our wine nights at least one night that she was here. And she told me the story about mom trying to steal this crappy metal fork from the restaurant they had been at. And Lexi had put it back down on the table and mom had looked right at her and swiped it again. And finally, Lexi's like, when she walked out, she's like, my mom's stealing your fork and I can't stop her. Sorry.
Sorry about that. I left an extra tip.
Yeah.
She just would do the funniest thing. She, of course, was very fond of men. So, and my mother had always been very shy and very proper.
PK Health. the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Just had no problems walking up to men in the grocery store and just petting their shoulder.
Oh,
you know, and just looking up, and I'd be like, she thinks you're cute. I don't know what to tell you.
So, we don't take her out a lot. It's okay. That's what I usually say about Natalie. Yeah. It's okay.
We absolutely couldn't once COVID hit, you know. Yeah. For one, I couldn't keep a mask on her, but I couldn't keep her hands off of babies and men. Yeah. Like, oh my God, mom.
That's listed in the side effects of dementia. We'll touch frequently other individuals. Loss of inhibitions. So
I made a post once, and the other thing about writing was so important to me, but I also loved creating the images for each post because almost all of them are I built from ground up. So I have this picture of mom just really mad at me at some restaurant. I didn't get her cocoa was out or something. But I took it and I darkened it. And then the caption was, I'll hug you if I damn well feel like it. I've got dementia. You know, it's
like favorite
no
memes.
Rules. No rules.
I love that.
I think you have to have humor when in the hard. I think you got to find that. You mentioned that one night while your sister was there, you all always committed to having a glass of wine. And so what were those, were this just, I love wind down kind of conversations. What are the things you're talking about? I mean, are you talking about your mom or are you just trying to have other conversations?
It was all of it. FYI, it wasn't one glass of wine.
Oh, usually, sorry. I knew it wasn't.
Usually two bottles, maybe two and a half. There was the time we thought the house was burning down and turned out the dog had just gotten into a skunk, but we called the fire department and tried not to wake up mom. And yeah, that was fun. Then Lexi proceeded to flirt with the fireman. Clearly we were drunk. Those Norton girls.
Oh.
Yeah, we would talk about everything. I think it was a safe space for us because, you know, the wine kind of allowed us to pull away from how much we were still angry at each other. You know, we could talk about mom. We could talk about what was going on there. I love to hear about Lexi's life because my life was all right here. So she would come and tell me the stories about who was being a jerk at the restaurant and who was doing really well and the funny things that had happened. And, you know, she lives in a small community on the coast and, you know, they're a bunch of rascals and characters. So I'd always be so excited to hear about the outside world. Yeah. So that was a lot of it too.
Wow.
Do you ever any of those moments you're like, gosh, I could be doing this instead? Do you ever have those moments when you were there, like, this is my life. Like, I cannot believe this is happening. And then, cause I think there's the voice that's inside. Cause you know, it's not always caregiving is not rosy and great and it's hard and sometimes super crap. And did you ever have those moments that did the wine, I would say, I think the wine helped with that, probably talked with your sister, those moments and how you kind of just got through them, got through the hard.
I don't know. In some ways, yes, but overall, no. The funny thing about leaving the post-production world, and I was doing so well, I had only been down there for 4 years and I was just getting leaps and bounds ahead of other people who had started around my time. But California didn't work for me. LA didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. People are lovely. It's too hot. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's never green. It wasn't me. So I always tell people kind of the last gift my father gave me was his death brought me home. Mm-hmm. So I didn't, it would have been nice to continue. It would have been nice with all the hustle I did for 4 years to finally get to an editor's chair. But I didn't regret it that much because when I got home, I knew this is where I needed to be.
Wow.
And to take care of mom. Sure. There were times when I was like, wow, I could, you know, my friends are all going to a movie and then we're going to dinner and then doing some crazy, you know, club night. I can't, I can't. So there were smaller things for me, but I always knew this had to be done. This journey had to be done. And sure, there were times I wished I was elsewhere, but not in a big picture. Like, I would have been a zoologist by now if Mom didn't have dementia. You know?
Yeah, right.
That was perfect.
I would always want to be a zoologist, Sam. I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be my choice, Kitty. So tell me, because we talk to other people and that your tribe, those people that support you are so important. So as you created like a tribe, but a tribe of other people that you started communicating with around the country that got with you through this journey. Like you guys, it wasn't just Lexi. It wasn't just your sister, like online. This is like, tell me about those people, because I think there's so many people that are like, I can't get out of the house. How did you find them? Who are your peeps?
I created this blog. It had a lot of humor in it. It did not discount the tragedy, because there is plenty of tragedy, but that's how these people found me. So they found me first.
Yeah.
And actually Mom was, first it was the Alzheimer's Association in UK was running, I think they ran three of our pieces.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the first thing. It was like, Mom, you're kind of famous in England.
Right.
And I'd be like, what do you want to say? Piss off. No, she was nonverbal by then, so I couldn't get her to say it, but, you know, so these people found me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I was so excited when people would, you know, respond in the comments to a blog piece or email me or, you know, any of that. I responded to everybody. I was just like, hi, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. Sorry, it's going so bad. You have the best caregiver day you can, you know? So I developed these relationships with people, and there were five people in the US that became very important to me. And sometimes we would Zoom, or sometimes it was just an email relationship, or, you know, it was always virtual. There was nothing
right.
personal about it, except I'd be having a really bad day and I'd open my email and here would be something from Roseanne Kerkorian, you know, who does the Daughterhood, the podcast. But none of us were doing these things yet. You know, right. She's taking care of her mom. Her mom actually died 2 months after mine. You know, so we were all kind of in the same place, and they would get it, you know,
right.
And they would make me laugh, and it'd be like that kind of turned my day around, or at least made it a little bit better so I can go back upstairs and stop being rotten to my mom, you know, because somebody down here gave me whatever I needed to tweak my head and get back up there in the game. Yeah, they became very important to me. One, Grace. She and I started a pilot program in 2019, these people wanting to try online Zoom caregiver support groups, which, you know, I was like, that's genius, because dementia caregivers can't always get out.
Right.
You know, they, for some reason, they decided it didn't work and stopped it in February. And then the pandemic hit. But Grace and I and our other friend Tess, who we all met through this pilot program, we still meet, you know, once a week, sometimes only once a month if we're busy. But, you know, so they became so important to me. Once a week, I could get out on there and just laugh with these ladies and tell our terrible tales and get comfort and empathy. And it was amazing.
There's so much power in relationship. There's so much power in that connection and the relatability of it. I think that's why we wanted to start the podcast, because every person that we have on here, like you're talking about dementia, but I'm like, ooh, I relate to that. Yep, right. I did that.
I think any long-term end of life care situation is extremely traumatic, and it's going
Very
to be
traumatic,
even
yeah.
harder on you if you try and do it by yourself. My father tried to do it by himself. And I don't think dementia killed him. Pancreatic cancer killed him. But I think the fact that he was exhausted, that he spent so much time on Mom's needs, he didn't ride his own as he should have. Yeah. He might have had maybe 2 or 3 more years, you know?
Yeah.
So I hear you saying this, and we've heard this before, is that caregivers typically are the worst caregivers for themselves. They don't do that. And so I hear you saying that your dad probably didn't focus on his own health as much, probably the timeliness of, you know, are you getting annual checkups and really paying attention to what your body's telling you? Did you in turn take care of yourself? Because I'm wondering.
God, no.
Yeah. So no. Okay. Well, number one,
I drank.
Yeah. And you're turned out
fine. That can be healthy. Okay. That's good for your heart.
It's heart healthy.
Red wine is
in the Mediterranean. Uh-huh. Add some olives to it and call that a day. And so, yeah. I feel like we should be drinking right now, but I don't think I'm allowed to. I feel bad that we don't have alcohol, but whatever. No big deal.
Well, what we did differently is we opened up Mom's World. It was no longer, you know, mm-hmm. her paddling after Dad and Dad just taking care of her solo. It was, you know, we brought Mom's the third of nine. We made sure she was seeing family. You know, I love to go visit my aunts. I don't care if it's a 3-hour drive into Central Oregon, you know, put Mom, she loves to drive, not drive, yeah. ride.
Ride.
Where we would have ended
our mom loved to drive too. That one time when she recorded herself
like
driving.
Canada, mother.
So you guys, I love that you kept her active though, Kitty, as long as you could. Do you? I mean, I know that prolonged her life as well, her quality of life.
Yes.
I know we were seeing that with Mom, that we're getting her out, although she's now in a facility. Getting her out and not just saying, okay, it's over, we're just going to go ahead and plan for your death, but saying, no, it's not over. Right. I know with dementia, it's a cruel disease, but did you plan for that day? You know, you said, okay, we're knocking on death's door. I knew that I was going. That's why I went home. So you know that ultimately that's the end. Where's your head at? Are you grieving prior to, are you just taking it day by day, or how are you doing that for 5 years?
I think for me, the grieving happened earlier, probably with Mom and knowing that this was going to be our journey. You know, like the first time she didn't know my name or forgot my birthday. There was a day, probably a year after we got her diagnosed, where we were driving around and she turned to me and asked if I'd ever been to her house. And for some reason that hit me the hardest out of all really? The stuff. But I also was like, I can't live like this. This is a long disease.
Yeah.
I can't live in this tragedy. I'll take it day by day. And I think I really switched to the day by day. And yes, I would plan things for the day. Sometimes that would really backfire because when your dementia person's having a bad day, it doesn't matter if it's like all their favorite things all at once, they're pissed. You know, they don't want anything to do with that chocolate milkshake that you just handed them. They're just mad, you know? And my sister was much better at just going, okay, she just doesn't feel like doing this today. Whereas I was like, we have planned this. I have bought the tickets. We're doing this. You're going to have some fun, you know?
I do like a retreat, mandatory fun time. That's what I call work retreats, mandatory fun time. Damn it. We will have
fun. Sure she did the same thing for me when I was a kid, but you know, dementia's not having it. Dementia's like, I raise you this.
Yes.
And then it beats you handily.
Watch me now. So here's the thing. So you then, I'm just kind of looking, I'm mindful. I'm like, oh, there's so much more to discuss. So you're working with your mom, you're going through this time. I just want to ask one little puppy question. Do you have insurance at all during this entire time to take care of yourself and your own health and wellness and that sort of thing?
I had that union insurance that lasted, like I said, I had like a good 9 months of staying on stuff. And then I did go without insurance for a couple of years, but, and then now I'm back on insurance. Yeah.
Right. Well,
but yeah, there was
a time that you didn't have it.
Right. Because I just couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
Even Obamacare was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I actually paid my sister and I through my mom's finances because I still had bills to pay. So,
okay.
So I was making some money, you know, but I didn't want to drain her. We didn't know how long this was going to last. I didn't want to drain her funds down. So it was pretty minimal, but it was enough for at least me to not go, you know, into what do they call it when they send the person to your door and they take your car?
Oh, that'd be bankruptcy. Repossession.
Repossession. You know. They were repossessed. But here's
jail.
Isn't it funny? It almost sounds a little bit like, oh, I paid myself a little out of our mom's finances. You know, there are these really awesome people who stand on the sidelines and are really good at judging. And, you know, we pay for paid caregivers, and yet we know that the outcomes are better for individuals typically when it's family. And so it's not allowed for family members to get paid typically, depending on kind of insurance and that sort of thing. It's not social in our society. We don't do that. And then I think some people be like, oh, you're still in your mom's money to pay yourself. Like, I'm assuming you're making six figures. And yeah. Honestly, you might have, I'm going to say some days, and I know Emily deserved seven figures. Yeah. Seven figures is
what I think her average 24/7 was probably about $1.10 an hour.
Yeah. I was pushing it. Yeah. So how do you
really
that? It was very difficult.
Yeah.
Because the alternative would have been if you didn't have some level of income, you would have had to work, which meant you would have had to hire somebody, which is like people.
Or
with
she would have gone into a facility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and so yeah. I think we've got to be able to normalize allowing for that to happen, to say, hey, it's fine to pay, you know, a family member or to care for you.
I would really like to see that as a social safety net, because my mom had the resources that we could do private pay. You know, mm-hmm. I set up a payroll company. I mean, or I used a payroll company. I went through all the steps. I talked to everybody beforehand. All of her sisters knew. I was like, I'm going to start paying Lexi and I. Do you have any issues with that? Too bad.
I was getting ready to say, I'm like, did you care? Because I don't know that I would have cared at that point.
No, I did, because I wanted everything to be above board, you know?
Right.
I just wanted people to understand where we were and what we were doing. But I think some of the new legislation coming out is going mm-hmm. to provide, I believe it goes to the states, and the states can decide now if they can help these family caregivers. Because what about the people whose parents didn't do well in life and they don't have anything and they've got kids mm-hmm. to raise?
Yeah.
You know, it's that's the real tragedy. Everybody's going to die. And at some point, most of us are going to help somebody get there. Why can't we help those people during that time? I have no issue with my tax dollars going for that.
Thank you.
Me neither.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
I would agree with that. And I think the more that we talk about it, the more we have that conversation. I think, you know, even movies like your documentary, so because we're going to get into your documentary, like that's important. Like this information, we talk about, like nobody wants to talk about death and dying. And nobody wants to talk about dementia or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. It's not sexy. It's not young. It's about as sexy as all these wrinkles on my forehead. Go to our YouTube channel.
I'm trying to make dementia cool.
That's right.
So, I'm trying to make it so like in 10 years, people are like, oh, you have a heart disease? That's too bad.
Yeah.
I have dementia.
I got a crown. I'm one of those purple hat ladies.
So let's go into the video, Jay. Let's go in the documentary. Yeah.
So your mom, she passed away in 21. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of like us with the podcast. We just said, hey, let's start a podcast. So Kitty, you went a step further and said, hey, let's make a documentary. Tell us what exactly,
like, how did it come about?
Yeah. What is that about? That's a step above a podcast, sister.
Yeah. I did have people suggest that maybe I turn the blog into a book. And I thought, I don't want to do that. I want to keep that a free resource for people. If it's helpful, leave it. But I did want to stay in this. I wanted to make things better for the other people coming up into this. And I think that's what a lot of us, when we're finally released, we stay in these roles because we want to make things better for the next generation. So that was a big overall thought. But smaller thoughts were, I need to get the hell out of this house. I just want freedom. Those five people that I had talked about, I want to go meet them. I want wine. I want to recreate what my sister and I had usually once a week. And I just want to sit and talk. And I want to spew my caregiver stories, and I want them to vomit up theirs. And I want some healing and some processing. So initially I was just going to get in my 94 Ford Escort and go, which by the way, I bought new.
Ooh.
I know. I finally got rid of it this year. It was hard.
I was like, dude, one owner, that's not value. What? 10,000 miles later.
But then I thought, I want to go camping. You know, I want to take my dog. I want to do all these things. And then I thought also, what if we film this? What if I just film this stuff on my phone, and maybe there's some kind of film I can make out of it. And I went bigger.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to do that, why not do it professionally? You know, so I hired a DP, director of photography, and I hired a great sound guy, and I bought an old used RV, and I had a friend do a logo, and I plastered mom's face all over it. And I suckered my boyfriend into coming along as the second camera, you know, my girlfriend down in California, who is a screenwriter, so she never has a job. I pulled her up.
Made her everybody go with me.
You're not doing anything.
And we called the RV.
Oh, this is the best.
It was called the Gloria. she was old and smelly, and she kind of had a little trouble on the road sometimes, and she was a little grouchy, and that was all just like mom. I nicknamed her the Gloria.
And so you cruised all over the U.S. visiting these five people. So like I said, I mean, Jay and I had the opportunity last year to get to see that, I think about 30 minutes of it. It was because it's on the circuit. I don't even know what it's called, right? I'm trying to be cool, but I'm not. And so, but we saw the first 30 minutes and I'm like, I got to have more of this. It was so good and so different.
I made the movie that I wish somebody would have shown me in 2016. Yeah. Because, you know, there's that phrase, like every dementia person is different. It's like, well, yeah, that's true, because things are breaking down differently. People have different places they are in their lives, different support systems. But what would piss me off so much about, especially medical professionals telling me that, is like, no, there are commonalities. And you could at least warn us, you know, that incontinence is going to be a big part of your life. Yep. Get over the poop thing, because it's going to happen a lot. The rage stage might be a part of your dementia person's journey. They are probably going to wander. Most people do. You know, there was just like nobody had any information. Nobody could tell us, like nobody warned us. We had no forewarning that things might, like this might happen. And that's in we talk about the financial side of it. We talk about, you know, the dying part of it. We talk about all of it. We talk about the humor, you know, the funny things that happen. We talk about how it feels afterwards when you wanted your person to die because you want your life back, but you also can't let them go, you know, and these are normal. You're going to feel this way. And I wanted caregivers to know that this is probably going to happen to you too. And it's probably going to happen to your dementia person. Mm. I mean, I still get on the forums all the time, and I think the most common question I see in a headline is this normal? It's like, yes, it's all normal in dementia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's all the same thing with Parkinson's. We're like, somebody, you know, mom's symptoms are different than a lot of things that are in the textbook. But if someone says something to us, we're like, that's, yeah. Emily's like, yeah, that spitting thing is, that's normal. Don't worry about it. All that excess saliva, roll with it. So, wow.
And yes, you can use Botox to impact spit.
Yeah.
So where is,
right? Yeah. Did you know? Yeah. Drooling. Yeah.
Not only for your forehead and your eyes, but you can also use it in your glands to dry up saliva.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
And I always wonder about how that happened. How do you find that? How do you find that side effect? Like, exactly. Who was the winner for that one? And how did, you know, you're stressing at that point, like, oh, I don't have any saliva left. And it's 6 weeks later, like, oh, it's back. So, frequency Botox every 6 weeks.
So I know we're like, I get to call it. Like, yeah, I know we're short on time, but I have short. I have questions. So,
oh, you mean sister questions?
What? I get to do mine first? What? I
never let's first. Do our sister questions. Okay. It's time.
So Kitty, I know that the film, as Natalie says, is on the circuit. If I know that you have a website, tell us just because everybody needs to see this film, and it's not just about dementia. Like it's caregiving 101, dumpster fire, get ready, laughter. So what can we do to see it? What's the plan? Are you international yet? Are we ready? Can we get you international?
So, we're doing the festival circuit right now. And we plan that. For one, this is my first feature film, and I kind of needed that time to figure out what comes afterwards. Mm-hmm. So until October 31st, then we are done with screenings that don't, any festivals that would not, we would not qualify for their festival if the film was public. Got it. So starting November 1st, which this worked out great, National Family Caregivers Month, we're doing a huge push. Then the film can go public.
Okay.
We have so many things planned. It's not international yet. And that's probably going to take me until 2024 to figure out how to get it to other countries. But for November, we're doing as many community screenings as possible. Anybody, anywhere could do a community screening at this point.
Okay.
And we've already got our kickoff celebration in person. We've got people talking. I'm talking to people in Texas. I'm talking to people on the East Coast. There's people up in Canada. Everybody's kind of looking. We're going to try and get as many of those in-person screenings in November as possible. Also, please follow us on the website, because that's where all this stuff's going to be announced. The weekend of Thanksgiving, that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that's going to be Thankful for Caregivers weekend. And I want every caregiver who wants to see it for free.
Ooh.
So we're asking people to kind of pay it forward. Like, can you afford a ticket? Can you afford $50 on top of that? That's going to get 5 caregivers who can't afford that in for free. You know, wow. So we're kind of doing that, getting that started. A lot of this right now is just the strategy on the page and in the pitch deck. Mm-hmm. So I'm still working out how we're going to get all that going, but follow us on Wine, Women, and Dementia. You're going to be the first one to know about when we have another festival. We're doing a pre-funk with a bunch of influencers the last week of October, where we're going to show that 28-minute excerpt and then do a Q&A with these people who have, like, some of them almost have like 1 million followers, you know?
Wow.
So they get to meet their influencer, they get to see part of the film, and then they get to sign up for, you know, any of the virtual screenings we have.
Awesome. That's awesome.
We are looking forward to that. You will find more information about that on the sisters page as well.
No kidding. We got to talk, especially our folks across the pond. And because, you know, we're new to UK Health Radio. Hello, we love you. And so we're so excited. So, you know, maybe there's something that we could think about being able to talk to our folks and our friends over there to see if there's something we can do in the coming months. So that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. Emmy, what you got?
I struggled with this. So I'd love to know how you dealt with it relationship wise. I mean, how did you feel like balancing that between him and you and your mom? And did you, well, you said prior, you didn't take a lot of time for yourself, but you're just giving. Like, how did you keep that afloat?
It was really hard. And I must confess, I'm probably not very good at it. I think I have a fella who understood that, you know, if he'd a point blank asked me, is there any room in this relationship for me? It'd be like, only what you carve out, because right now everything's focused on mom. He didn't ask me that. I think he just kind of intuitively knew it. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that, because I think that's the only way my relationship is still going. And we're at 19 years that we're going to celebrate either tonight or tomorrow. So,
I love that. All right. I've got 40
Well, I've got a minute and 45 seconds, Kitty. Here's the last question. What is your favorite guilty pleasure?
Oh,
besides wine, because we all know that.
I was going to say, as of late, I know this exactly. I will watch the trashiest murder movie or series. I had to work in reality to get my union hours down in LA. I swore I would never go back to watching any kind of thing. But yeah, I'm always scouring Netflix to see what is the most outrageous, trashiest thing that somebody dies in the end.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know what? I love that.
Kitty, thank you so much. You are fantastic.
It's a good time. Thank you, lady.
We love you. Thanks, Kitty. And thanks to everybody for listening in. Until the next time when we confess again. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions Show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all of our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you. Okay. Let's talk disclaimers. We are not medical professionals and are not providing any medical advice. If you have any medical questions, we recommend that you talk to a medical professional of your choice. As always, my sisters and I at Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver have taken care in selecting the speakers, but the opinions of our speakers are theirs alone. The views and opinions stated in this show are solely those of the contributors and not necessarily those of our distributors or hosting company. This show is copyrighted and no part can be reproduced without the expressed written consent of the Sisterhood of Care LLC. Thank you for listening to the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio.